sky, or space, is the resting place of everything. The sky does not mix with anything, nor is it entangled. Similarly, the sun is not at all attached to the water in which it is reflected within innumerable reservoirs, and the mighty wind blowing everywhere is not affected by the innumerable aromas and atmospheres through which it passes. So we've got three analogies here. What are they about?
Space.
Someone else?
Sun
and?
Wind.
Yeah. And these are all analogies of?
Detachment.
Although the sky or space is the resting place of everything, the sky does not mix with anything, nor is it entangled. Everything rests in the sky, but it doesn't get entangled. Generally, if people are resting in you, they're attached to you, you become entangled. Similarly, the sun is not at all attached to the water in which it is reflected within innumerable reservoirs. So generally, the places in which we see ourselves, oh, I belong here, I'm this, I'm this, we become attached. And the mighty wind blowing everywhere is not affected by the innumerable aromas and atmospheres through which it passes. Whereas generally, whatever atmosphere we're in, we become affected by it. Right? If you walk into a shop where they're playing loud music, your heart rate goes up and your body becomes affected. You're in a peaceful place. You become peaceful. In the same way, a self-realized soul is completely detached from the material body and the material world around it. So these analogies are given because if we just say, become detached, well, how do you do that? What does that mean? What does that look like? What does it feel like? So these examples are given. He is like a person who has awakened and arisen from a dream. So here's another example, that a detached person is like someone who's, oh, I'm awake now. That material life was like a dream. With expert vision sharpened by detachment. Ikshaya, vision. Shitaya, sharpened. Sharpened vision. It's like when you get old, you have to have glasses to have sharp vision. So your vision becomes sharp. My father told me until he was 19, he didn't know he needed glasses. So materialistic persons, everything's fuzzy, but they don't know it's fuzzy. They just think it's normal. And detachment sharpens your vision. You see the world for what it is. With expert vision sharpened by detachment, the self-realized soul cuts all doubts to pieces through knowledge of the self and completely withdraws his consciousness from the expansion of material variety. Completely withdraws his consciousness. So that the self-realized soul appears to the materialistic person to be in a dream, because they're not, their consciousness is not absorbed in the illusion. Purport. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, a self-realized soul cuts all doubts to pieces by direct experience of his true spiritual identity. So by seeing the truth, you lose your doubts. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna, and there is no possibility of any existence separate from Lord Krishna. Such expert knowledge cuts all doubts to pieces, as stated here, prakriti-sthopya samsaktaha. Like the sky, the sun, or the wind, one who is self-realized is not entangled, although situated within the material creation of the Lord. That's the word api, even though. Nanatva, or material variety, refers to one's material body, the bodies of others, and the unlimited paraphernalia for bodily sense gratification, both physical and mental. So generally, this is what we're attached to. This body, our relations, our friends, our home, our car, our whatever, all of our paraphernalia, our pots and pans, our clothes. By awakening to Krishna consciousness, one completely retires from illusory sense gratification and becomes absorbed in the progressive realization of the soul situated within the body. The word progressive, Prabhupada often talks about how it's a gradual progression. As revealed in the example of the two birds in a tree, both the individual soul and the personality of Godhead are completely separate from the gross and subtle material bodies. If one turns one's face to the Lord, recognizing one's eternal dependence on Him, there will be no further suffering or anxiety, even though one is still situated within the material world. The unlimited experiences of material objects only increase one's anxiety, whereas perception of the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, immediately brings one to the platform of peace. Thus, one who is intelligent retires from the world of matter and becomes a fully self-realized Krishna-conscious person. Prakriti stobhya samsakto yata kam sanditani laha vaisharadye kashakya saya sangha sitaya chinna samsayaha pratibhura ivasvapnan nanatvat vinivartite. Although the sky or space is the resting place of everything, the sky does not mix with anything, nor is it entangled. Similarly, the sun is not at all attached to the water in which it is reflected within innumerable reservoirs, and the mighty wind blowing everywhere is not affected by the innumerable aromas and atmospheres to which it passes. In the same way, a self-realized soul is completely detached from the material body and the material world around it. He's like a person who is awakened and arisen from a dream. With expert vision sharpened by detachment, the self-realized soul cuts all doubts to pieces through knowledge of the self and completely withdraws his consciousness from the expansion of material variety. So everybody wants peace. Everyone wants peace and freedom. This verse is about, and here in the purport, peace. It's also about freedom. Nobody wants to be enslaved. So many movements within human society for liberation and freedom. I mean, here in America, we're very proud of democracy. Right? That we're not under dictatorship or some sort of repressive government. We have the freedom to move from one place to another. It's not like that in many countries of the world. In many countries of the world, you have to get some sort of a pass just to go from one city to another. And to do practically anything, you always have to register with the government. And in some countries, they even tell you what occupation you can have or how many children you can have. Like in China, you know, if you want to have more than one child, they'll force you to kill your child or to put your child up for adoption. So, you know, a place like that, nobody has any brothers and sisters, nobody has any aunts and uncles, nobody has any cousins. The society is saying, no, you can't have any freedom. So we're all looking for freedom. We want individual freedom to make our own choices about life, to be our own person, and we want peace. And generally we try to find these through the unlimited experiences of material objects and through the satisfaction of our senses. We think, if I just get this new car, or if I just get a better house, or if I just get a better education, or if I just find the right kind of intoxicant, or whatever, depending on our particular mentality, that then I'll find the freedom and the peace I desire. Or if I just move to America, right? I just get married, if I get unmarried. We're thinking that by adjusting the material energy, we're going to have happiness. So a little bit more intelligent person figures out that that's not working very well. And even ordinary people figure that out occasionally. You know, even materialistic people who generally think that if I just get this object or this person or this position or this, then I will find happiness and peace. Every once in a while, they have feelings of detachment. You know, if they just got in a big fight with their spouse and they think, I don't want to deal with anybody anymore. Let me just go in a cave somewhere and not deal with anything, right? Let me just become detached. Let me get away from everything. Let me go to Hawaii or Tahiti or Southern California. Just chill in the water, not worry about anything anymore. So even materialistic people have moments like this called bhoga tyaga. They think, let me enjoy, let me renounce. Let me enjoy, let me renounce. And when they renounce, they're bored. They get some peace. They get some freedom, but they're not having any relationships. They're not having any variety. They're not having any activity. They become bored. And again, they try to enjoy. And again, they're frustrated. And then again, they renounce. And then they're frustrated with renunciation. And again, they try to enjoy. So the little higher above that says, wait a minute, it's not just that kind of renunciation. It's not just the kind of renunciation where, okay, I'm just going to have my own house and not have any family members and not talk to anybody. And just, I met somebody like this recently. In Hawaii, they live all the way out in the boondocks, and there's nobody around, and they just pluck their own avocados from the tree and go into town once a week to get something. And right? So a person on a little higher level says, wait a minute, that doesn't bring ultimate peace either. Let me come to an inner spiritual platform, just adjusting the material energy in whether I'm pulling back or whether I'm diving into it. That's not going to solve my problem. So then one becomes absorbed in the self. Now, of course, the impersonalists also try to do like that. And it is a fact that compared to material enjoyment, impersonal understanding is wonderful. Brahmano hi pratistaham amritasya vyastaja. Shaspatasya dharmasya sukasya ikantikastaja. The person feels happiness. And sometimes you'll find people who have out-of-body experiences and they'll say, oh, it's so peaceful, it's so happy. It's 1,000 times better than any sort of material sense enjoyment. And this verse seems to be describing, to some extent, that kind of detachment. That, okay, I don't have any interest in this world. Such a person sees that the things of this world, that attachment to the things of this world, either to try to enjoy them or try to renounce them in a materialistic sense, is the cause of all misery. Krishna talks about attachment, fear, and anger. And he talks about contemplating, one becomes attached. Through attachment, one becomes lusty. Through lust, one gets anger. And then one's memory becomes bewildered. So all of our suffering can be understood as this attachment. And those who are meditating on Brahman or who are absorbed in the self, they figure this out. For example, somebody was communicating with me. And they were communicating with me over a long period of time, and they were asking me for advice and for help. And then one day they said, well, I don't really like your advice anymore. I don't think I want to listen to you anymore. I just want to do whatever I want to do. So that was a little upsetting. But if my child said that, it would be devastating. You know, if my child said to me, you know, look, Mom, I really don't want anything to do with you anymore. You know, I'm tired of you. You're really not helping me in my life. Bye. So one is like a little bit, oh, it's too bad. And the other is like, oh, what am I going to do? So what's the suffering coming from? Two people are doing the same thing, but one causes pain and one doesn't. Hey, if somebody just walks by you on the street and says, oh, what do you look like, a clown, cult member? So what? Somebody on the street. But if it's a dear friend or relative who says, it's very painful. Why? Because of attachment. Because we're, and what are we attached to? We're attached to that this circumstance or this person is going to be my shelter. Here it says, one's eternal dependence on the Lord. So we're thinking that my dependence is on the Lord's energy separated from him. I see things as separate. I see, okay, this is separate from Krishna and I'm depending on that. Like sometimes devotees say, well, if I have material desires, I shouldn't pray to Krishna for them. I said, well, if you have material desires and you don't go to Krishna for them, then you're going to go someplace else, aren't you? You're going to think there's a separate means for fulfilling your material desires. Not going to Krishna with your material desires means that ultimately one should not have any material desires. So we're thinking like that. Let me depend on something separate from Krishna. Let me depend on my bank account. Let me depend on my memory. I was talking to someone the other day who said, you know, whenever someone gets an argument with me, I pretty much know I'm right because my memory is almost always right. That's actually a fact. This person has an excellent memory. So we may be taking shelter of our memory, we may be taking shelter of our knowledge, we may be taking shelter of our fame, our reputation, our political connections, who I know, who I don't know, our family members, our electronic equipment. I had someone tell me this the other day too. If you really want financial security, buy electronic equipment that has good resale value. And then you'll get your freedom and your peace. Okay, I have something. So we're depending on so many things. So the jnani, it's talking about jnani, the jnani sees this is the whole problem. Because as soon as I'm depending on something separate from Krishna, I'm on a shaky platform. Everything's shaky. Here he talks about even the body. The body is very shaky. Like you were telling me, you just slipped and you broke something, you know, you broke a bone in your body, right? We're thinking the body's a shelter. About 6 months ago, I fell on some slippery stairs and broke my foot. Oh, and then I had to be on crutches. And I was in India and I couldn't clean my own floor. It just was physically impossible. I couldn't wash my own clothes. And this body is such a fragile shelter. You know, I'm thinking, okay, this body's going to do what I want to do. I want to move my hand, it'll move. See, if I want to get this, it gets it. It just does what I want. But it doesn't always do what you want. So therefore, you're full of anxiety. You can't have any peace. Impossible to have peace. And as Krishna says, you can't have any happiness without peace. If my happiness is coming from something that's not dependable, whether it's my body, my electronic equipment, my bank account, my job, my memory, my friends, my reputation, the fact that any ISKCON temple will give me a place to lie down and something to eat. Okay, well, that's my shelter. I'll always be okay because, you know, they'll always at least give me a place to put down a sleeping bag, some khichdi. But that's a shaky platform, isn't it? Maybe you go to a temple where there's a mean temple president and he says, sorry, we don't give any place for people. That actually happened to me right before I actually moved to the temple. I was visiting one temple when I was at college. I said, it's a long drive. Could I come the night before I stay overnight? No. We only let fully committed people stay. So whatever one's shelter is, right? One's always feeling anxiety. And then you try to depend on the shelter more and more and more and try to make the shelter more and more and more perfect. I'm going to have the perfect relationship and the perfect job and the perfect house and the perfect this. And you're always in fear. So the impersonal says, oh, forget this thing. Just be detached. See everything like a stranger in the street. See everything like a dream. Say, you know, nothing is mine. Not even this body. Because really, that's true. This body's not mine. I didn't create it. Someday I'll leave it. You read about people who have, you know, near-death experiences and they often they're looking at their body lying on the hospital bed and saying, God, that guy doesn't look like he's in very good shape. Oh, that's my body. So this sort of detachment is like, oh, okay. I really don't have anything to do with this. My so-called family, you know, last life they might not have been my family. Next life they might not be my family. My home, my nationality, my possessions, my personality in this life. It's all just, it's a drama. It's like you may act in a play, and in the play you have, you know, a certain family member and a certain role, a certain persona, and then you walk off the stage and you take off your costume and makeup and it's nothing to do with you. So then you achieve real peace and real freedom. It's interesting that detachment, we talk about the Krishna having six opulences, and the opulence of detachment is the most solid of the opulences. If you have beauty, beauty is very flickering. Those of us who are getting old. Right? And once you get really old, there's no question of being beautiful anymore. See some people try, you know, plastic surgery, whatever. And it can, you just get in some bad accident or disease and your beauty can be gone. Wealth also. Right? We're such a wealthy country here, but then there's economic collapses and we can become a poor country. I was reading about Argentina and one of the Turkey that suddenly got plunged into poverty.
Greece,
yes, also very well, and just immediately overnight. And my devotee friends told me, I lost all of my wealth overnight, just from the economic collapse. Wealth is so shaky. Of land, land could be devalued. So many things. And knowledge, you know, a bad disease, a bad accident, you can lose all of your knowledge. Fame is very, I think, the most shaky. All somebody has to do is write something nasty about you on the internet. There goes your fame. Strength, again, just getting old, diseases, accidents, gone. But renunciation, that you can keep. Nobody can take that. That belongs to you. You can keep it in all circumstances. So the most intelligent person says, if I really want freedom and peace, I will be detached. All right, so if one's detached by meditating on the self and on reality, on truth, then one becomes like the sky, like the sun, like the wind. But avasuddha buddhiya, that's still not purified intelligence. It's not final. We can't just stay detached. Not only materially, bhogatyaga, can you not maintain a position of detachment while you're still in materialistic consciousness, but even if you come to a higher level of Brahman realization, you can't maintain it, because that's not ultimately the only thing that we want. Yes, we want peace. Yes, we want freedom. But that's not all we want. We also want relationships and variety and adventure and excitement. And that's not available in only detachment. And in fact, just having impersonal detachment, it can't stay. We'll be drawn back to relationships, to variety, to adventure, to excitement. Therefore, it says here, that if one turns one face to the Lord, recognizing one's eternal dependence on Him, awakening to Krishna consciousness, to be absorbed in the ultimate reality. So there are many religious and spiritual organizations in the world that are saying, if you really want freedom from suffering, then get total detachment. But how many people are saying that if you really want freedom from suffering, and ultimately what we're looking for, you become attached to a very young boy who plays his flute and herds cows. And even has a girlfriend. Lots of them. And that's really what we're looking for, isn't it? An eternal teenage party. So we want. But one without anxieties. One without thinking, you know, if I don't go to class tomorrow, I'm going to get a failing grade, and then I won't be able to get a good job when I grow up. So that's how we really become detached, by having Parandrishta Nivartha today, by having something higher. Really, everything we're looking for in this world, we're looking for it in this world because it exists somewhere. We want a perfect family life, whether it's with everyone at least has a mother and father. I remember times in ISKCON when the renunciates would just get on the grihasthas for family. Everyone's for a family. So we want a perfect family, or perfect friends, or a perfect community, perfect job. But that's with Krishna. Yad bhava bhavita diyo manujasta taiva samprapya rupa mahima sanayana bhusha suttaryameva nigama pratitai stuvanti. We have everything there with Krishna. So if we become absorbed in Krishna, then naturally the world becomes like swapna, becomes like a dream. And we're not interested in it anymore. And just like, exactly like more taste. Yeah. If you have really nice prasadam, giving up meat eating is pretty easy. It's not difficult. I don't think any of us who were meat eaters before think, I really want a hamburger. Never. It's not attractive. So when one becomes absorbed in Krishna, then all of the things of this world are not attractive. And what's interesting is that although Krishna's pastimes are full of adventure and excitement and thrills, you know, Krishna's in Indraprastha and Shalva's throwing tree trunks and lightning and snakes on Dwarka, and Prajumna's fighting heroically, and Krishna's not back yet, and it looks like Prajumna's died. And is Krishna going to get back? Is he going to get back in time? And of course he comes in just at the last minute, like the heroes always do. And there's just 2 seconds left on the clock. And saves the day. There's still peace. So in this world, when our things are threatened, which they are constantly, we're in anxiety and angst. But in Krishna's pastimes, there's always peace. And yet there's excitement. And yet there's adventure. So that is the purpose of our Krishna consciousness movement, to be absorbed in Krishna. Everything we're doing, taking care of the deities, distributing books, cleaning the temple, cooking prasadam, whatever we're doing, that's its purpose, to be absorbed in the reality. And then all of our problems are solved. We will never solve all of our problems by manipulating the material energy. That will go on eternally. I didn't get it right this time. Let me try again. Okay, another life, try again. Another life, try again. Another life, try again. Nor will everything be solved just by being merged in Brahman. But to be absorbed in Krishna, then, it says here, Krishna provides everything we need. That doesn't just mean food for our body and clothes for our body. It means he provides for all of our deep needs as a soul. So questions, comments, corrections, chastisement? Yes,
Pramod. I was thinking the body, how its beauty can be taken away very quickly. Well, just don't wash it for a day or two.
Yeah.
Even the prettiest body will become very,
unattractive.
Well, isn't also how you define beauty, though? Is like,
well, bodily beauty.
Oh, body beauty.
Yeah. People in this world, we look to those opulences as a shelter. I mean, there's statistics that attractive people make more money. Attractive people are more likely to get help if their car breaks down on the highway. That's men and women, not just women. Attractive people are more likely to get a job. They're more likely, to get paid more. They're likely to have people help them more. Like that people trust them more. We more quickly trust attractive people than unattractive people. So a person who's, whatever, I mean, all of us have some attractiveness. We take our attractiveness as a kind of shelter. I think women do that more than men. Attractive women really can get what they want. It's a tool to, that's how I'm going to fulfill my desire. People have wealth as a shelter. If I have money, I'll be able to get what I want. Right? Don't you treat wealthy people a little nicer? Most of us do. Right? And you might do things for a very wealthy person that you wouldn't do for somebody who's not very wealthy. So people take that as a shelter. Or if someone has a lot of knowledge, or someone has a good reputation, they're in a better position to fulfill their material desires. So therefore we take that as a shelter. If I could just get beauty, if I could just get wealth, if I could just get knowledge, if I could just get strength, then I'll be able to control the material energy and fulfill my material desires. But if that's your means of getting your needs met, you're on a shaky platform. You're always going to be filled with anxiety.
So you could consider that our false ego trying to,
yes,
manipulate our desires. And
yes. Well, the root is wrong.
Yeah.
Ahankara vimudadna. The whole root is wrong, that I am the enjoyer of the world. The world is meant to fulfill my desires. I am a material being. Let me use material means and opulences. We're basically trying to use. All these opulences are all manifestations of the Lord's pleasure potency. We're trying to be the controller of Prakriti. Krishna is the controller of Prakriti. We're trying to control Prakriti to fulfill our desires. It doesn't work. First of all, our means of doing it is shaky. And second of all, even if we got all the things that we want, we still wouldn't be happy. So it's a platform of great fear and anxiety and a lot of anger, attachment, fear, and anger. When my happiness is coming from my material attachments, then I'm always fearful that they're going to be taken away, that the things of my enjoyment will be taken away, and my means to acquire them will be taken away. And then I'm angry. If someone threatens my basis, I become, if someone or something threatens it, I become angry. If my source of happiness is in meditation on Krishna, even if your source of happiness is detachment, you'll be free from fear and anger, because nobody can take that away. It's not shaky. It's not dependent on any external circumstance. That's the whole definition of detachment. You're not dependent on any external circumstances. So just that, you come to a platform of peace and happiness. But it's not the, but that's not all we want. It's like if all I gave you was chapatis. Well, you want some pickle and some mango lassi too. Okay. When we come to the platform of saying, just like here, depend on Krishna. Krishna is going to meet all of my needs all the time. Maybe not exactly the way I have in my head. And maybe sometimes in ways that don't make sense to me at the time. Maybe sometimes at the time it seems like it's the opposite. But even children don't understand how their parents are meeting their needs. So when one has that mentality, Krishna's going to be, I don't have to worry about my needs. I can just worry about pleasing Krishna. He'll worry about my needs. Like the old traditional wife that's practically gone now. You just take care of your husband and your children, and your husband takes care of you. You don't have to worry about it. He pays the bills, and he says, you don't even have to think about it. He takes care of you. That's our position. We're Prakriti. then the peacefulness and the freedom from fear and anxiety is automatically there, and then you absorb yourself in Krishna service. You're not even thinking about the peacefulness and the freedom from anxiety and the freedom from distress and your own happiness. It's, it doesn't even have to be. Is that okay? I should end now? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
You like that recorder?
Yeah.